Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of So I Married a Horror Fan. Do you know what? Episode 50, y'all.
Woo, girl.
I know we said it in Friday's episode, but for all of our American listeners, we hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving and a lovely Black Friday weekend. I can't wait to see all the posts on the TL about all the air fryers that everyone bought for 50 cents this weekend. Boom. Had a nice weekend. I can't believe we are doing our last episode for November.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Did you know we're 3 weeks away from celebrating a year anniversary of So I Married a Horror Fan? Our first episode aired on December the 21st, 2020.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, that's crazy.
Oh.
Once again, I want to thank everyone that's been sticking with us for the last year. Well, nearly a year. All the content creators, fans, people that listen, everybody that's like retweeted, liked, shared, you know, all that good stuff. It's massively appreciated. If you guys want to catch us on anywhere, we are on social media, SIMAHF pod on Twitter. So I Married a Horror Fan on Tumblr and Instagram. And those links are always in episode descriptions if you find yourself wanting to come follow us on social media. Yeah, this is crazy. Episode 50. Before we get into what we are covering today, I'm just going to let you guys know up top what is coming in December. So on Friday, I believe, we posted an updated list of what we're covering and what we're doing in December. If for any reason you haven't seen that, don't worry, I got you. I'm going to recap right now what's coming in December. So, and next Monday, December the 6th, we are covering Gremlins. On the 10th of December, we are doing our 5x5 on our top 5 horror movies of 2021. On the 13th of December, we are doing Better Watch Out. On the 20th of December, we are covering Krampus and celebrating our 1 year anniversary. On the 23rd of December, get yourselves over to the Horror Bandwagon channel because we will be guesting on that show as part of that Scream Appreciation Month covering Scream 3. You know that's going to get wild. On the 24th of December, so Christmas Eve, we got you covered. You don't have to sit at home watching Home Alone and eating trifle for all the people in England. I guess in America, you would be at home eating yams and watching Home Alone, maybe, I guess. I don't really know what Americans watch at Christmas time.
No, neither do I.
We will be doing an end of year special. So we will be looking back at the first year of So I Married a Horror Fan. We will be discussing basically everything, how the Lees found the first year, how the first year has gone. We'll be looking at some of our favourite films that we've covered. We'll also be looking ahead to 2022. We'll be giving you guys the full rundown of what we've got cooking for you. We're not going to give you our full lineup, but there's some big changes that are coming next year that we're going to go through with you guys. So that will be on Christmas Eve. And then our very last episode of 2021 will be Nightmare Before Christmas on the 27th of December.
Technically, it should be the Nightmare After Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, we probably should have done that in Krampus's place. But hey, hindsight's 2020. So that's what's coming in December. That's how we are rounding our year off. I'm very excited about it. I'm looking forward to January. January's going to be a spicy month.
It is.
There's like 5-6 movies there we're covering in January. Which is very exciting. As always, keep it locked to our social media for updates. And once again, thank you to everybody that has been with us for these, I'd say 50 episodes. We've done way more than 50 episodes. We've probably done like closer to 100, I would have thought. Because we've done 50 numbered episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've done a bunch of just random one-off films that we covered, like new releases. And then we've done like a bunch of, we've been doing like 5x5 since like March.
Probably around about 70 or so.
Yeah, we're closer to 100 than we are 50. But yeah, it's been weird, but we'll save that for the end of year episode. But today, what are we covering?
Today, we are covering the 1999 film Idle Hands. What? Not to be mistaken with the 1999 film Idle Hands.
Is there two idle hands?
So there's idle hands, as in I-D-O-L.
Yep.
And then there's idle hands, I-D-L-E.
Oh, what's the other one about?
So the other one is about a bunch of friends having a poker night when one of their friends who they haven't seen for ages reappears and accounts a tale of him murdering a shaman and stealing an idol.
Oh.
As in, the evening turn takes an unexpected turn. There's nobody in it that, like, they don't even have pictures on IMDb, so I feel like it was one of those...
It sounds like a more interesting Indiana Jones. A
little bit.
When did it come out?
1999, yeah. Exact same year.
Wow.
There is no trivia, there's nothing.
Holy it's shit.
Literally just...
Interesting.
That's it. I kind of want to see it now, though. I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, but we're not covering that.
We're not covering that. We are covering the 1999 film, Idle Hands. This does not help anyone because they sound the exact same.
Idle Hands rather than Idle Hands.
Yeah. Idle, not Idol.
Idol.
Idol. Idol.
Just imagine the film's about doll hams. Possessed doll hands.
Yeah. So, film was directed by Rodman Flender.
That guy's got such a cool name.
He does. And it was written by Terry Hughes Burton and Rob Milbauer. Cool. Ron Milbauer, even, sorry, not Rob.
Double writer duties there.
It is. And starring in this 1999 classic, we have Devon Sawa, Daddy Sawa, as Good Anton Dev. Tobias.
I just want to say, 4 years after Casper.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Seth Green as Mick. Eldon Henson as Penub.
That's such a great name.
Jessica Alba as Molly. Vivica A. Fox as Debbie LeCure. Christopher Hart plays The Hand. Jack Noseworthy as Randy. Katie Wright as Tanya. And then there's other people, but they're not massively important to the plot.
Big man Sean Whelan's in it. And Fred Willard. I think we have to give a shout out to Fred Willard, because that dude's an actual legend. If you click on his IMDb page, you'll definitely know him from that.
Who, Fred Willard?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly who Fred Willard is.
He's in, like, a lot of those, like, best in show, like, those type of comedies, like those, like, docu-comedies.
Yeah.
And he's in one of the American Pie movies. I want to say American Pie 3. I think he plays Michelle's dad.
Yeah, he's in loads of stuff. He's one of those actors that
I think he passed away
recently. He's in Anchorman.
Yeah.
Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he passed away fairly recently.
May 15th, 2020.
Yeah.
Absolute
geezer.
But he plays the dad. I suppose we've got Connie Ray plays the mum.
I always, do you know what? It's really weird. Fred Willard, like, sub little sidebar. I always get him and the other guy mixed up. The other guy of about the similar age who plays the commentator in Pitch Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
John somebody. I can't ever remember his name.
I know who you're on about.
But yeah, I like, they kind of star in similar types of films, usually in similar types of roles.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Fred Willard's in maybe one of the Legally Blonde movies. Or he's in a movie with Reese Witherspoon in it. I'm sure of it.
I will investigate your plan.
But this movie's got a lot of people in it. Like, while you're looking that up, this movie's got a lot of people in it. Like, especially in the young cast, as they were peaking. Because you had Devon Sawa, 4 years removed from Casper. One year before Final Destination came out.
Yeah.
Seth Green is obviously, by this point, he's already done the It miniseries. He's already done Can't Hardly Wait. He's done Buffy. He's already in Buffy as Oz at this point. Eldon Henson is in things like O, which I think came out the year after this.
Mm-hmm.
He's in... what's the fucking movie? She's All That.
Mm-hmm.
He's in something else. There's something else around that time that he was in as well. He's in a lot of those like teen comedies.
Yeah.
And that's how he kind of made his name. And then obviously he went on to be fucking Foggy Nelson in the... Daredevil show
a
couple years ago.
Yeah, he's in Avocado at Law.
Yeah, with Matthew Murdock. And then this is like, I think, Jessica Alba's first film.
I think you could, in fact, be.
And then she went on to do Dark Angel, like the same year or a year later. Because I think this is definitely pre-Dark Angel. I think this is like the first big acting role that she had. And she's very, very young in this. She's maybe like 17, 18 in this.
I believe so. What, it was 99 this came out? So she would have been 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, 18 years old. I have no update on the Reese Witherspoon. He has 313 acting credits. So,
and then obviously Sean Whelan, I have to give a little shout out to my man from Tammy and the T-Rex and Wes Craven's People Under the Stairs. He's a weird actor, man. He's in loads of shit, but he's just like a really weird character actor. So yeah, this movie.
Technically, this was not Jessica Alba's first movie.
Oh.
Because she was in Never Been Kissed.
Fuck me, she is. She's the mean girl that like bullies. / befriends Josie Grossi.
Yeah, she was also in Camp Nowhere in 1994.
Is that the third Camp Rock movie?
No. It's a... I don't think it's a Disney film, but it's of a similar vein.
Right.
But, you know, Dark Angel came out the year after this. It came out in 2000. Oh, such a good show.
And then Vivica Fox from, like, loads of stuff. Most notably, by this point, Independence Day. And then she went on to be... in the Kill Bill movies.
Yeah.
Because there's like a weird rumour that like obviously Quentin Tarantino wants to make Kill Bill 3 and focus it on the bride's daughter and her daughter. And he's obviously said like Maya Hawke would play Uma Thurman's daughter because that's her IRL mum. And then somebody was like, oh yeah, Zendaya as Vivica Fox's daughter. And I'm like, sure. Just sure.
But plotline wise, this film. So IMDb synopsis says... A teenage slacker's right hand becomes possessed with murderous intent. Yeah. That is this film.
Do you know what, though? I'm not being funny. Do you know, like, I will say one thing about this movie, and it's the only area in which this movie shows restraint. Other than the one tiny joke that Randy makes, definitely thought there would have been more wanking jokes in this movie.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, because he mentions, like, when he's got his hand in his trousers and he's, like, doing that, and he's like, oh, are you playing a little game of two ball there, bud?
Oh, I don't know, because there's also the joke, the line where they're on about his left hand, because they're like, are you going to get rid of the left hand as well? And he's like, I do a lot of things with my left hand. I spark up, I change channel on the remote, and then he does the little wanking...
Hand motion. But yeah, I definitely thought there would have been more hand job jokes in this movie. Like, I'm very, very shocked. It's that type of movie where you kind of expect it.
Mm.
I'm going to... Like, now that you've said it, because you had a piece of trivia that you wanted to tell me, and now you said there's two writers on this movie, I'm now wondering if one writer thought he was writing the one movie and the other writer thought he was writing the other movie.
I don't think it had anything to do with the writers. I think it had to do with the cast. So, basically, in an interview, Seth Green said... I'm going to quote what he said word for word as well. The best thing about this movie was that everybody was working on it had a different mission statement. We all thought we were making a different movie. Me and the boys, the other actors, Devin and Eldon, we were convinced that we were making a high drama about with some comedic elements, and we tried to make our relationship as lifelong best friends believable. The director, Rodman, was attempting to make a throwback Italian horror film, like a Dario Argento flick. The writers really wanted it to be The Heathers, and the studio was listening to the test marketing and saying that they really wanted the zombies to be cuter and to have more wacky antics. And apparently all the kids in the audience thought that there should be more pot smoking and that pot should have saved the day. And somewhere, somehow, Jessica Alba needed to get her top ripped off. And that is how the whole new ending got shot, where she's up on the car and gets her midsection ripped off and pot saves the day.
Yeah, because there was a different alternate ending that I think is a lot darker.
Yeah, with the gates of hell opening.
Yeah, it's on the Scream Factory Blu-ray. You can actually see footage of it. Like, so when James A. Janisse from Dead Meat did the kill count, he actually showed a bit of footage from it. And it shows the gates of hell opening and, like, the hand and shit like that. It's really fucking cool, man.
So, here's a fun fact about this. So, this film cost $25 million to make. It made $4 million back.
Wow. But it was one of those movies. I don't think it was marketed very well. I don't think it actually came to the cinemas in the UK. I remember renting this movie from, like, my local video store... purely based on the fact that it was a horror movie and it had Seth Green in it. And that was literally the only reason. I was like, I don't even care what this movie's about. I was like, Seth Green's in it.
Yes, it doesn't have anything on here about the UK film release. It opened on the 30th of April in 1999 to 1,611 theatres.
Yeah.
In America, that is it.
So, and I, you think as well, like, 1999 in film was a big year. Like, that's coming out just before the summer that saw, like, The Matrix come out and The Mummy come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all of these big movies. Like, there are other movies that came out in 99. I'm struggling to think of them off the top of my head. But, like, that's not a movie you release in fucking April. Like, this is a movie set at Halloween. It's a horror movie. Like, release it in, like, fucking
well,
October,
it was
November
time. It's supposed to be released a lot earlier, but obviously due to the situation in America at the time, it got pushed back.
Mm.
So I think originally it was supposed to come out a lot earlier, but with everything that was going on in the States at the time, they pushed it back.
Well, I mean, this movie, I think, was meant to come out the holiday season in, like, 98, but, like, April 99, that's when fucking Columbine happened. Like, yeah. Are you fucking joking me? Like, you have a movie about a teenager killing his mates, released in the same month that Columbine happened.
10 days after Columbine.
Yeah, that's fucked up, man. Like,
yeah, I think it was originally supposed to be released earlier, but it did get pushed back.
I think also that's probably a reason why this movie may have failed, because at that time, like, people were probably thinking, like, we don't want to see, like, movies like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know. Like, I was around at, like, obviously I was a teenager at the time when Columbine happened.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what the culture in America was like at the time, because obviously it affected us in the UK very, very differently. I don't really know what people's mindsets were at the time.
Yeah. I do love the fact, though, so on the IMDb page, it says that the film was pushed back due to the Columbine Massacre by 10 days. What?
Yeah.
That's insane. Because for some reason, I always thought that Columbine happened in 98. So I was like, oh, it makes sense that they'd have pushed it a year to, you know, because of that. Also, this movie only has a 15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Do you know what, though?
It has a 58% audience score, but the tomato meter is 15%.
I was going to say, because it's one of those movies that, like, people, I don't want to say they reevaluate, but people, like, everyone that I know or everyone that I follow from, like, horror blogs or horror magazines or, like, actual fans, it's a movie that people are always like, people should see this movie. This movie's fucking great. Like, you know what I mean? Jawbreaker is another movie that came out in the same year. Because I think I mentioned that earlier when you said that the gym was used in the same...
It was.
Because Jawbreaker came
after this, I think. Yeah, it was the same gym that Jawbreaker and Buffy were filmed in.
The film, not the TV show.
The film, not the TV show.
Just an important distinction. They are two wildly different things. So, I guess we should get into it. Like, what do you think of this movie? Like, when was the first time you saw it? You saw this movie before we got together, right?
No.
Did you not? Okay.
No, so I didn't see this film until we'd got together. And in all honesty, like, it's one of those dumb films that... if I've got nothing better to do, I don't mind putting it on. But it's just... I know it's supposed to be a horror comedy, and, like, there is parts of this film you watch and you can see, like, the Italian film influence on it. But to me, it's just, like, a dumb stoner comedy. And it's the kind of thing I would put on, like, if I'm not feeling my best. So kind of like Dude, Where's My Car? And stuff like that. And I would just stick it on and be like, this is dumb and I mean zero brain function. I'm here for it.
I will say one thing, though. Like, you can tell that the director thought he was making a different movie. Because this movie looks way better than it has any right to. The cinematography in this movie is fucking amazing.
It's really funny, though, because you're watching it and some scenes look really well put together and really well done. And then it'll click over to the next scene and it looks like they've made it on, like, $3 on a phone in a gas station. And you're like...
And I do wonder if some of those shots were, like, insert shots or, like, reshoots.
Yeah.
And it's, like, often in the same scene as well. There's two incidences where it happens. So there's a scene where Mick and Penub are in the kitchen, and Penub's head is on the table, and it's when they're talking about the burritos. Anytime they get a full shot of Penub's head on the table, the colour palette is completely different. But then they'll cut to Mick and he'll be a completely different colour and the lighting in the scene will be completely different. And then there's the scene where they pull up at the dance after the kiss couple.
And there's that overhead shot.
Yeah, the overhead shot.
So cheap.
Looks like it's filmed... like, you know, in America when they do those special like news reports where they're like chasing a man through Florida and the helicopter... Like, the news at 10 helicopters like following a car chase and all you see is like the grainy helicopter footage. That's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then, like, it clicks into the actual, like, them on the ground. And, like, it's night and day. It looks like it goes from VHS to HD. And it's like, what is this?
What is going on? But, yeah, it's one of those really dumb, stupid movies that, like, I have no real strong feelings on it one way or another. I'm just, like, it's a dumb film that I quite enjoy watching.
Yeah, I think it's one of those like weird movies. Like, I have a lot of nostalgia for this movie.
Yeah.
So me and my sister watched this movie like religiously when we were younger. So this is 99, so I would have been like 14 when it came out. And my sister would have been like 12. And it's an 18. And we rented it. And there's like there would be moments like... At 12, my sister had no idea who Leatherface was, but there's the scene in this where he's got the electric car, and I was like, ha-ha, look at me, I'm Leatherface! And, like, me and my sister would just quote jokes from this movie and lines from this movie that both of us were, like, at the time, far too young to be, like, quoting and to, like, understand. And, yeah, it's one of those weird movies. Like, because of that, I hold such a lot of nostalgia. And,
like, I do feel like this is essentially the film for you that Bring It On was, like, for me and my friends. Like, we quoted it religiously at each other. And there would not be a day go by where one of us we're talking, we must have about maybe, like, 13, 14. And there wouldn't be a day that would go by where one of us didn't have to do something at school. And you'd see the rest of us in the corner going, be aggressive, be aggressive. And then everyone else would be like, what the fuck are they doing? And there's just a little of group of us going.
It's because you all really like songs about blowjobs written by Faith No More.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and I think, like as I said to you when we were watching this, like, Seth Green in this movie, aside from the pot smoking, was me as a teenager. I dress like that, I look like that, I talk like that. And I was like, I think that's another thing as well. Because, like, when I was a teenager, when I was just starting to get into, like, punk rock and, like, metal and stuff, like, I used to dress like the guys in The Offspring. And I used to dress like Seth Green, like, T-shirts under bowling shirts, baggy jeans, massive chain, black spiky hair.
Seth Green in this film reminds me of a lot of guys that I fancied as a teenager. And I'm like, oh, I had such bad taste. They were either Seth Green or they were, like, quintessential scene boys. Like, they were my two types. Actually, Devin Sawa, because I always had a thing for who would later on be the gay ones in every boyfriend I liked as a kid.
But, yeah, like...
Damn it.
So I think that's why it, like, it's a snapshot of what my life was like at the time. And, like, The Offspring are in it as well. Like, they get, like, a two-song cameo, which is great, and... that was, like, my real height of, like, loving that band and thinking that band was, like, the best thing since sliced bread.
This film also has fun little cameos in it. It has two super fun little cameos.
Yeah. Tom DeLonge is in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, but like, Dude Ranch, pre-Enema of the State. Because Enema of the State came out in this year, but I don't know if it was, like, if it had been released just yet.
I don't know.
So I think it's, like, pre-Enema of the State. Literally two second cameo, one word. He doesn't even say a line, he just says one word.
This is cool.
Yeah, and then he just leaves. Yeah. And like, you have to really be paying attention.
Yeah, otherwise you won't realise.
Because he's got a safari hat on.
And then the other one, we didn't realise that he was in this, we say in this film, there's a photo of him, until we watched the credits and we were like, holy fucking shit. So the jungle guy who has been killed in the film and they're holding a memorial for, is it the one they're holding the memorial for?
No, because that's the twins. That's the Valentine twins.
He's just one of the guys working in the jungle restaurant.
Yeah.
He has no speaking. I thought he was the twins for some reason.
No. He might be.
I don't. I think he's the guy that Devon Sawa pushes past.
Yeah.
And nearly knocks over. It's fucking Kyle Gass.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because this would have been like pre-Tenacious D as well.
Yeah.
Pre-Tenacious D.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's the guy that he nearly knocks over running through the restaurant. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, I think that might have been Kyle Gass right there.
Kyle Gass is in this movie. Me and KG.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, this film has some weird cameos. This film's just weird in general, to be fair, though.
Yeah, like, the thing is, though, I feel like with this movie, it never goes one way or the other.
No.
Like, it never becomes a full-on comedy, and it never becomes a full-on horror movie, but it does enough of both things that it is both things.
Yeah.
Because every time it threatens to become too much of a stoner comedy, then, like, a murder happens or something horrific happens. And, like, the minute it threatens to become too serious as a horror movie, like, somebody will crack a joke or somebody will, like, say something.
Look at me, I'm Leatherface.
And I love the fact that this movie's super gory, but a lot of the kills are, like, off-screen.
Yeah.
So, like, the vast majority of the kills are off-screen. Like, Tani gets killed off-screen, his mum, his dad, Mick, and, like, a couple of the other people.
Technically also, so does, I know Penub's death's not off-screen, is it?
No. The Feinstein, or Feinstein, however you say their name, twins, both get murdered. Like, we don't even know that
they're dead until there's a news story about it.
I'm sure there's a few people at the dance that get killed. They get, like, trampled.
The couple in the car.
Yeah. Well, like, that kills are on screen, because you see the hand crush her neck.
Yeah, but you don't see it, though.
Hmm.
You don't see his death.
Yeah, his head gets, like, smashed against the window. Yeah.
Did I miss that?
Yeah. And they're like, Dexter Holland's death is probably one of the best deaths in the
movie.
His overacting is...
I think that's one of my favourite things about this film, is Devon Sawa overacts every moment. He also does a great job of acting against his hand for, like, the first half of the film.
So, Devon Sawa acts a lot like Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead 2 in this. And it's fucking tremendous to watch. Like, the scene that you pointed out where he's, like, flicking the, like, remote between his two hands right before he grabs the cat and throws the cat out the window is fucking amazing. But there's, like, some really good scenes in this movie where he's kind of, like, acting against the hand. Yeah, like, it's just the little things he does, like, how he's trying, like, the little motions that the hand makes or, like, the way that the hand is animated. And I mean, his performance is quite over the top in this anyway.
Thing is, though, is I feel like if he didn't give that massive over the top performance, this would be a very different film. Because a lot of it does rely on his performance. And he's very good in this. I will say that for him. He is very, very good in this.
Yeah.
But I quite like Devon Sawa anyway.
And now he plays twins in Chucky.
Double Devon Sawa.
I love how he So he, I think I mentioned this in another episode. When he was in Canada shooting Chucky, he posted a picture of himself in the gym with no shirt on and grey sweatpants. And he, like, tried to play it off, like, completely innocently. He's like, hey, so what is it with, like, all the gay guys and, like, grey sweatpants? And he's just, like, in the gym with, like, these abs out, like, in these grey sweatpants. And I'm like, you know exactly what you're doing, mister.
Devon Sawa.
And then there's, like, two of him in Chucky, and it's like, come on, man. Like, we know.
I'm now going to go look at that picture, actually. I don't think I've seen it.
He chucks first try.
I love the fact that his name on Sawa is, on Insta is, oh, no, that's not. That's not him. That's a fan page. How do you spell his surname?
Saw A.
Does he have an official Instagram?
I think he does, but he mainly just posts stuff to Twitter. Like, because I follow him on Twitter.
First traps. I don't use Twitter. This is the problem.
Mainly for the traps.
I don't think he has an Instagram.
Just type in Devon Sawa grey sweatpants and you'll see it. anyway.
That's what you want to see.
Anyway. I think the three main central characters in this movie are very good. I think Mick, played by Seth Green, is probably my favourite character in the entire movie, just because he is Seth Green, but as a zombie.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he's fucking awesome in this movie.
I mean, I love Seth Green in everything he does.
Except Scooby-Doo 2.
Oh, no, I like Scooby-Doo 2.
I like Scooby-Doo 2. I don't think he's very good in Scooby-Doo 2, though.
I mean, I'm not watching Scooby-Doo 2 for him, but I'm not angry at him.
I'm watching it for those monsters to be unleashed, bro.
Yeah, obviously.
But yeah, there's, like, some of his line delivery in this movie, and his facial expressions are fucking amazing. Like, when he finds the piece of the ripped T-shirt, and he, like, holds it up to the, like, a hole in Anton's, as played by Devon Sawa's T-shirt, he goes,
the killer was wearing your t-shirt.
Yeah, and it's when he goes, I'm going to call 911. What's the number again? And he's got just like some tremendous like line delivery. It's just so fucking funny. And like when he's regaling the story of how they could have gone to heaven, and he's like, yeah, there was this white light and these stairs and these angels, and we were like, fuck it, it was really far. And it's just like, it's just... And like, I think, like, I'm not a huge fan of Eldon Henson. I don't think he... I think he's very one note. I think he plays the kind of sad sack best friend in pretty much everything. But I think he's very funny in this. Like, some of his physical comedy is really funny in this. Like, when they're at the dance and he's like... He's got his head. So his head's basically been put on by like a skewer, and it's been duct taped. And he's doing this, like he's wobbling his head around. He's like, oh, it's kind of loose. He's like wobbling his head around. And I'm like, that stuff is really fun. There's a one moment in this where I thought Devon Sauer's like comedic acting is brilliant. It's when he turns up at Molly, as played by Jessica Alba's house, and he does that scene where he's like pressing the buzzer. And he kicks himself off the door and falls into the bush.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that is a tremendous piece of, like...
She makes the joke as well about him being in her bush at that point, doesn't
she? Yeah. Do you want to talk about how Jessica Alba is treated in this movie? Because I, like, looking back on it, I can see why the internet have kind of complained. But I was like, she, like... Now, I don't want to make an excuse for this, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say before you get into it, because I'm really interested. I think she is written and she acts basically how every other female character in a stoner or teen comedy of that era pretty much acts. You look at all the girls in American Pie, you look at all the girls in, like, Can't Hardly Wait, like, Not Another Teen Movie, like, all of these other movies, and she is basically just written exactly the same. I think it's the way that she is, like, I mean, she was, what, 17 when they would have made this? Mm-hmm. She's 18 when it came out. She's very, very, very overly sexualized in this movie, and there is that one particular scene where everybody on the internet went apeshit about it. Looking back on it now, and I can kind of see it from both sides.
Which scene?
So the scene where he turns up at her house, he's covered in blood. She's in her underwear, essentially, like
she's in a crop top and shorts.
Yeah. And then like he like slaps her on the ass, like quite aggressively, and she's like, "Oh, I didn't think you'd have the balls to do that." And I think looking back on it now, people are like. Like, we're in the age of consent, we're in the age of, like, the Me Too era. They were like, would she really react like that? Or like, how is that scene played for laughs? Mm. And I'm like, I get it, I 100% understand what you're saying. But I think context, and I think I'm really interested, like, to see what you think of it as a woman.
So, I have two schools of thought on this one. I think if her character had reacted any way differently, I'd have been like, oh, that's a bit consent, guys. Like, but the thing, it's a weird one because personally, I don't take that much offence from that scene because, okay, yeah, he grabs her ass or the hand grabs her ass. We'll be very clear on this because it's not the character. But I don't really 100% understand where a lot of the outrage came from because, okay, yeah, she is played as a sexualized character, but her reactions are more of her owning her own sexuality and being like, well, I didn't think you'd be brave enough to actually hit on me. Mm. Like, I've been waiting for you to make a move so that I can make a move without seeming like I'm, to put it in a way that men would put it, a bit of a slut.
Yeah.
Because obviously we live in a world where when a woman makes a first move on a man, she's generally viewed as being too forward, easy, everything like that. And I like that about her character in this is once he's made that first move, she's like, oh, you're into me. Perfect. I have free rein now. I can jump on that. It's fine. But she can't make the first move because of the way women are viewed when they make the first move.
Mm-hmm.
So it really confuses me of the reaction to it because, okay, yes, she is very sexualized, but as you said, every girl in stoner comedies are sexualized in that way. And normally, they play more of like a meekish virgin
mm-hmm.
of...
Well, look at, like, case in point that you mentioned that. Look at Michelle from American Pie, who's, like,
the band nerd,
who's then, like, really, really filthy.
Yeah.
That's, like, they flip it on his head, and it's like, okay, like, we're going with this. All right, cool. Like,
yeah. But, like, that's the thing with Jess. So you look at a lot of women in films where things like this happen to them, and they're normally, like, quite the meek virgin character. And they're a little bit, like, I don't want to say pressured, but it always comes across a little bit like they're being pressured into sexual encounters. Whereas Jessica Alba's character kind of does flip it on its head, because you kind of expect her to react badly to it and be like, what are you doing? And him kind of talk her into it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, so it's like that? Are we gonna...
Yeah.
Let's go. Which I really like. Like, I'm a big proponent of women, you know, wanting to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
To put it crudely.
I think a lot of people had the issue with it, of, like, the context of, like, how the scene plays out. Like, they don't really have any kind of relationship prior to that. Like, they share one scene together before that. And then, like, he turns up at her house, like, covered in blood, like, acting weird.
Yeah, but it's also, like, the night before Halloween.
Yeah, I know.
And he's a known stoner. It's not, like...
I mean, I'm just trying to, like, play devil's advocate and put over the argument of why people see...
I understand what you're saying. And I get when people are like, oh, well, they don't really know each other. Like, this is probably, I'm gonna overshare slightly with all of you, but women, and I've done it, we will sleep with men we don't know, but we won't talk about it because we're judged for that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
And sometimes it leads to marriage.
Sometimes it leads to marriage. But do you know what I mean? Like, especially back in the 90s, so this movie came out back end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s. Like, if you... slept with a guy you didn't really know as a girl, and people found out, it'd be like, oh my god, you're so easy, you're such a slut, like, and like, your number mattered. It was like a really big deal how many people you'd slept with. So for a film of its time to have a female character who was very sexually forward, and but not in like a she's a slut kind of way. It was just a she knows who she wants to sleep with, and she knows how she's going to get to it. She just needs him to make the first move.
Do you know what the funny thing about this is? And this is kind of very telling of what you're saying, is that nobody ever talks about Randy. Now, there are two incidences in this movie where he is very problematic.
Oh, yeah, massively.
So, one is when he's hitting on a hot... He's like late 20s, maybe.
So he says he graduated high school 3
years
ago.
Yeah,
He's 21.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
But do you know what I mean? Like... from the context we have of the film, he's about 21, and she says she's a senior.
Yeah, so she's the same age as...
So she's 17, Hanab and 18.
And, yeah. And then, so he hits...
And 18's pushing it, because that's like when you graduate.
He hits on a vulnerable, grieving teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scene where Vivica Fox's character gets hit by a car, he sees that she's unconscious, then he looks around to see if anyone's noticing him, smiles, and then goes to give her CPR. And I'm like, that... whole thing is played off very creepy.
Yeah.
And I was like, and nobody ever talks about the fact that essentially this guy is kind of a predator slash date rapist, and he drops homophobic language. He's the only character in this movie, surprisingly, because I thought one of the main three would be a lot more, because of the time that the film was written.
Yeah.
You don't expect it, but you go into a stoner comedy of the 90s expecting the F word. Or like more homophobic language, because it was very prevalent in a lot of those 90s comedies.
It was, so it was very true.
And it was, dare I say it, a big part of like American teen culture. I don't necessarily think it bled over into the culture here.
Oh no, it did.
But like, or maybe in the schools that I was in, it wasn't as prevalent. But especially in like American films, TV shows, that F word was thrown around so much. And, like, his character kind of gets away scot-free. He uses homophobic language, and as we've just said, he's a fucking predator, and nobody says shit about him. Mm. And I find that really fucking, like, weird.
See, this is the interesting thing I find about, the talk about the women in this film, is, so obviously, we talk about the Jessica Alba thing, and I get why people say it, because obviously, like, yeah, she is sexualized, but... any girl who looked like Jessica Alba looks, because she is beautiful, in the 90s, they would be like, right, I want to put you in the shortest shorts possible.
Yeah.
And have your tits basically hanging out. And she's in a bra and panties at the end of the film as well. But that was kind of common. I'm not excusing it, but it was kind of commonplace. We've become a lot more weary of it now, but back then it was a
and,
lot
like,
more.
The thing is as well, if you have issue with that scene or you don't, like, your opinion isn't wrong because everybody watches movies differently and you're entitled to get out of it what you get out of it.
But yeah,
like,
but
I just want to make that very clear.
To talk about the female, so she, not only that, but as a character, she is quite a forward female and she's smart as well, which I love about her character, is they don't make her the dumb, helpless until she gets hit over the head with the thing. Like, it's a vase dropped on her head. But, like, she figures out, she's, like, when they get trapped in the vents and her friend's just, like, freaking out. She's like, we can't get out. Jessica Alba's character is like, I can stop this fan. Like, I just need to stop the blade. She figures it out. Like, she works out an escape. She's really quite brave repeatedly throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about her. Like, she's not a weak, helpless character.
She has a sense of agency about her, which is...
And it's the same with Vivica A. Fox's character.
Debbie Liquor.
She's also, again, a really strong female character. And, again, is very sexually forward. So, at the end of the film, she says to
Randy,
she's like, and now for the ritualistic sex. Mm-hmm. And literally grabs him and drags him off. And I'm like, yes, women, just fucking take it. Like, bang a dude, like, fuck it. And I think it was really forward, because then neither of them are ever shamed for it at any point in the film either. Like, it's quite forward, especially for a film of its time, for a woman not to be shamed for being quite sexually forward.
Or to have a guy, like, freaking out about it.
Yeah.
Like... as displayed in, I'm going to go back to it again, the American Pie movies. This came out the same year as American Pie, and it portrays, like, very different, like, mentalities to that sort of thing. You know, but the 90s was a very weird time. Like, and it's weird to go back and watch movies like this now. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not, like, putting it into a thing and saying, like, I can't watch movies like this, because of course I can. Like, anybody can watch anything. It's just weird because it's like, it's a very specific snapshot of a very specific, like, time and place. And, like, it's kind of like, when you look back at stuff like this now, you're like, man, did people really dress like that? Or did people, like, really, like, do that kind of stuff? And it's more of like, as someone that lived through that, I'm like, that seems like a million years ago. Like, this movie came out 22 years ago, and it seems like it was a whole other lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a weird... sort of,
but yeah, it's a strange
capsule.
I remember everyone saying about the whole the scene, and they were like, oh, it's so inappropriate. But I think my favorite thing was when people were like, oh, she's basically in her underwear. I'm like, she's in crop tops and shorts. I'm not being funny, but when I was fucking 17, 18 and I looked skinny and fit, you think I didn't wander around in fucking crop tops and shorts around my own house?
I mean, I did,
yeah, because I was skinny.
I used to listen
and
to...
And B, I don't care if no one can see me. I wanted to look hot, like, irregardless. I'm, like, on my own in my house. There's nobody else there. And I'm like, I'm so sexy in my little crop top and shorts.
Mate, I listened to a lot of Britney Spears. I was very empowered as a teenager.
But do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like a perfectly reasonable outfit for a teenager to be wearing in her own house at home.
Yeah.
When you look like that. I no longer wear crop tops and shorts. Much to everyone's disappointment.
Outside of the comedy aspects of this film, how do you think this movie functions as a horror movie?
I always find it really hard to look at it as a horror film because my brain immediately goes, it's a stoner comedy. Like, it's a stoner comedy. Because it doesn't... any time we've watched it, I've never been scared. There's a few scenes that make me go a bit like, oh, that's a bit gross.
The opening's kind of suspenseful.
Yeah, the opening's quite suspenseful, that is very true, with that I'm under the bed bit, with his parents. But, like, yeah, outside of the burrito scene, where Penubby's the burrito and it comes leaking
he's
out
got, like,
of his
he's
neck.
He's got, like, poop neck.
And it's disgusting. And I was eating at the point when we watched that scene today, and I was like, oh, that's, no, nope.
Poop
nope,
neck.
Nope. That's disgusting. I don't think there's any scenes that really scare me in it. Mm-hmm. Because, especially as you get further towards the end, it gets slightly more stupid.
It gets really wacky towards
the end. It gets really wacky towards the end of this film. And you're like, it's been vaguely serious throughout most of it. And then the ending, you're just like, what the fuck?
One thing I will say about this movie, and I love, like, First off, I love that it's all practical effects.
The practical effect on Seth Green with the bottle is so good.
Yeah. And, like, I love the practical effects of, like, the hand and stuff. One of the things, this is one of the things I wanted to bring up with you, because stuff like this I'm always massively impressed by. And it was something I watched when I watched a backstage, behind-the-scenes thing on the Invisible Man.
Mm.
And it's how you have to account for the negative space.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, when they filmed the Invisible Man, all the scenes where Elizabeth Moss is fighting the Invisible Man or he's doing something, you have to look at the scene, and obviously he is a real, like, is a person in a suit, but you have to account for the space around them and where they would be in the scene in relation to somebody can't just fling their arm out and, like, hit him sort of thing. And it's the same with this movie, and I guess to a degree Adam's Family, because obviously the Christopher Hart, who plays the hand in this place thing in the Adam's Family movies, is now, obviously there are scenes in this movie where the hand is animatronic, and it's very obvious what scenes those scenes are because of relation to where the hand is and what the hand is doing. So it's crawling through the vent, and like when it's cutting the like light thing to come down and stuff, it's an animatronic. One of the things that massively impresses me about this movie is the way they account for space, because there's scenes where Anton is fighting the hand and clearly the actor is there and they're like in the scene together. So like the scene in the kitchen, the way they account for how it's shot, for where he would physically, they would have to block the scene for where he would physically need to be, but not for him to bang into anything or maneuver anything or make it obvious that there is an actor on the other end of that hand, is really fucking good. And like, it's really interesting how, because obviously they only need the hand to be in the scene, it's really interesting. And I love knowing things like that about how they block scenes and how...
I think my favourite thing with the hand, I don't think he does that as much in this film, but like when you see like behind the scenes of the Addams Family and they have him on like a rolling board,
yeah,
he's laid down with just his little hand. They don't really do it in this film, but like that's how they do it in the Addams Family, and it's my favourite thing.
Is it the first one or the second one where he's like, it's the second one, isn't it, where he's like on the roller skate?
Yeah.
And things like, and he stops and he spins the roller skate around and he like lifts it up and he,
you know,
like,
he's on a little skateboard.
No, it's a roller skate.
Is it a roller skate? For some reason I thought it was a skateboard.
Yeah, and he's like rolling down the thing. Because that's the way they shoot that is really clever. But like you think, because there's a, like this is obviously pre really good visual effects. So like you have to account for like the shadows and like the fact that that is somebody on the end of that hand. And it's just very clever. Like I'm always massively impressed with stuff like that. And, like, even the practical effect on the hand, because it's, like, a couple of different hands, because there's, like, the human hand, then there's, like, the gnarly, deteriorated zombie hand when he microwaves it, and then there's the one where it's got the fucking, like, deadly nails, where it's, like, put the fucking nails in the pencil sharpener.
One thing I will say, and I find it really interesting, because I find it the same with the thing, in Adam's Family, is, what's the actor called?
Christopher Hart.
Is so good at giving a hand a personality. Yeah. Like, even in this film, like, the hand has its own distinct personality when you're watching it. And it's really weird to see what is basically a thing that doesn't really have a personality. Like, my hand does not have a personality.
Yeah.
But both the hand in this and thing have, like, distinct personalities. And I love it. I think it's amazing. And I feel like I don't know any other hand actors. That's a weird sentence to say. I can't imagine anybody else giving a hand a personality.
Wait, you don't know about the great Joey Tribbiani and his hand twin who lives in Las Vegas? This hand is your hand. This hand is my hand.
Yeah.
No, wait, that's your hand. That's my hand.
But he's not a hand actor, is he? He's just a hand twin.
So if you're a hand actor and you book a gig, does that mean you've got a hand job?
A sausage handshake.
But you know what I mean though, like, hey, you've got the hand job.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, because I remember seeing BTS footage of Christopher Hart saying how like he wanted to make the hand different to thing. He didn't just want to come on set and do like a thing again. And like the hand personality changes as well, like from when it's the human hand and it's attached to Anton, and it's a bit more frenzied to how once it's like all fucking microwaved, and it
and
becomes
the
more malevolent.
Thing is that as he's like, because he was like, I don't want to bring thing. They are two very separate characters. If you think the way thing. You guys can't see it, but he's a lot more rounder.
And animated.
Animated. He kind of does this, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then this one is more like this, and it curves in on itself slightly.
Yeah, it's a bit more gnarled.
It's a bit more gnarled, and it's the way it moves. So instead of it being fun and bouncy, it's more like jagged and pointed. And I like that. It's a... You guys can't see what I'm doing. I'm trying to do the hands for Simon. He's like, this hand versus this hand.
Yeah.
And I think it is really interesting because you don't think of that as like a... Because like, if you'd have said to me, oh, this is a completely different guy to the guy who played Thing, I would believe you in a heartbeat because they are so distinctly different.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's really weird to me that it is the same guy playing two very different characters using the exact same appendage. But yeah, he's a fucking genius.
Are they the same hand as well?
Yeah.
So like he uses the right hand or the left hand for
he
both
uses
of them?
The right hand.
Yeah.
For both of them, yeah, Thing's a right hand as well. Which I think, yeah, because when Thing moves, he's like this, isn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's his right hand.
Yeah.
He's not like, a left hand.
I was like, do you reckon he's an ambidextrous hand actor? Do you reckon he could do both hands?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, no, he is. He's the right hand.
Yeah.
My brain's now looking at my two hands doing the thing way he stands.
But, like, yeah. It is super interesting, like... And to be fair, like, I love the fact that... Because, like, this movie has a ridiculous plot.
Oh, so
and, like,
stupid.
The movie works because of the way the actors react to the ridiculousness of the situation. But it also works because of the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And because... And, like, the way... The other thing as well I love is, like I said to you, there's certain scenes where this film has to be animatronic. And I love the fact that the animatronic hand... acts exactly the same as how he acts it out. And I was like,
is that specifically true? Like, there's definitely an animatronic hand?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in the BTS footage they showed that they built an animatronic hand, because obviously there's certain scenes where it just would have not worked. Like the scene, for example, where they're in the car and it's the girl and the man and he's grabbing her tits and then like the hand comes up at the middle. You can't have the actor there. You can't have him in front of the guy who looks like he's going down on his girlfriend and grabbing her boobs. There's no room for him.
So it has
to be an animatronic hand. And, like, as I say, there's scenes where, like, he's obviously doing stuff and the hand has to be animatronic. Like the scenes where the hand gets thrown and, like, it's in the air and she throws a knife at him. Like, and they... I remember they built, I think, at least one animatronic hand and they used it. And I think in... Adam's family, there's animatronic hands as well, because there's certain things that he couldn't do.
I don't know.
Just because
I've never really thought about it,
to
be honest.
The logistics of filming.
I've honestly never thought about it.
But it's like going back to my point of like him being in certain spaces, you can't put that actor in certain spaces because of how the scene is blocked.
Mm.
So I think they would have to employ props. But yeah, I do love how the hand works, and like the kind of like the mythology of the hand, I guess, is really fucking interesting. But yeah, and the other thing I love about this movie is Graham Revell's score. So Graham Revell, or Revell, however you say his name, I'm sorry if I butchered it. He did the score for The Crow, and I think The Crow City of Angels. And the Crow score is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It's such a great score, and I think the music in this as well is really interesting because it's kind of synthy, it's kind of evil, but it's also kind of like there's like
playful,
yeah, it has like different moods and tones to it. And I think again, this movie does not deserve to have the cinematography and the score that it has for what is essentially Dumb Stoner's Fight a Killer Hand. Like, it's such a like better movie than I think people want to give it credit for. And it's obvious that, like, in somebody else's hands, this movie could have been a lot less.
Yeah.
And it feels like everybody showed up and everybody was just committed to making this movie. And there are scenes in this movie that are absolutely gorgeous. And, like, the lighting is amazing. And, like, there's a lot of greens and reds. And, like, the opening shot of the house with the American Gothic, like, pumpkin-headed husband and wife in the window that obviously foreshadows what happens to Anton's parents. And there's just, like, some really, really cool moments in this movie. And you're just sitting there going, this is a fucking killer hand stoner comedy from, like, 1999. Like, why? You guys didn't have to go this hard. But I'm glad you did. Like,
thing is I would love to see how this film played out if you were stoned watching it.
Uh-huh.
Do you know, any of our followers in America, could you please watch this film stoned and let me know what
well,
it's
just,
like?
Just any of our followers just around the world.
Obviously, what I was more thinking was in America, marijuana is legal.
Yeah.
You can go and buy it and smoke it. It's fine.
The MJ.
MJ, if you could do that for me and just let me know how this plays out when you're stoned, that would be amazing.
Also, I want to raise this point because I feel like I need to get context of where this came from. So, as someone who's not a stoner, where did this whole you can smoke oregano or oregano for Americans and nutmeg
oregano.
Shit come from?
Oregano.
Like, because Offspring mention it in a fucking song.
Yeah,
and it's like a big part of this movie. Like, is there something in oregano and nutmeg?
It doesn't have any, like, genetic components that relate it to weed, though. Like,
because there's something in, like, the actual marijuana plant itself.
Cannabis.
That gives it the properties of, like, getting you high.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, you put oregano on fucking chicken.
And pizza.
And pizza. And people aren't getting fucking high
eating nutmeg and desserts.
Yeah, people aren't getting fucking high eating, like...
Yeah, I think it's just one of those, because it looks like weed, if you're not paying attention and don't smell it.
Yeah, like...
It's a really weird one. And I'm like, you're more likely to get high off, like, hops, because there's certain hops that are actually cannabis...
Yeah.
...related.
It's fucking weird, man.
I learned that recently, because the brew house near us, they have a wall about the plants that are used in hops.
What's staggeringly good?
No, the brew house kitchen.
Oh.
And they have a little thing, a display, and they've got all the hops in there, and it tells you about it. It's actually cannabis.
Yeah.
Or cannabis-related, should I say. It's not actual weed, but...
Because there's a scene in this where he mixes nutmeg and oregano together.
And smokes it.
And
he also gets the dog to lick the paper, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah. But I've always wondered where that myth came from. And, like, not being a stoner myself, I'm like, has anybody ever tried it? Like, I'd love to know if somebody's actually tried it, or, like, put it into, like, that weed as, like, a little, like... They're like, I've only got this much weed left. I don't have enough for a joint, so I'm just going to, like, fill it out with oregano.
I can't imagine it's good.
No, I can't imagine
it's
good.
I can't imagine it's good.
Sticking fucking... I'll be putting, like, fucking sage and rosemary in there next.
No.
It's fucking weird, man. It's one of those, like, weird urban legends where you're just like, this can't be
true. I think it's just because it looks very similar to, like, ground...
Yeah, and I think also it's one of those things. I assume it came from the fact that, like, a weed dealer sold it to someone once and ripped them off, and then they smoked it, and they're like, "Yeah, man, like, I got high on this," and it was like, it had a placebo effect.
Yeah,
and then that's probably where the legend came from.
Because
I'm sure that, like, somebody's ripped somebody off and, like, done a half bag of, like, half weed and half oregano.
I'm sure they have, like, a 10 bag, and it was like half.
I'm
weed,
sure
half
that's
oregano.
Like a thing that's happened.
Yeah,
but, like, it just seems like such a mental thing. But then I say that it seems like a mental thing that people would be smoking oregano. We live in the fucking time period where in the last 3 years alone people have eaten fucking washing liquid tablets.
And Tide Pods.
They've burnt themselves on fucking hobs for TikTok videos, and people were taking horse tranquilizers because they thought it was going to cure COVID. So
that is a really
the
good
idea
point.
Of like stoner smoking oregano doesn't seem that fucking weird to me. It just seems like something that's a bit like, what are you actually getting from this, rather than like a holy
we
shit.
We also live in a world where a president of the United States legit told people to drink bleach.
Yeah, and that the sun was going to burn away COVID.
Oh.
Man, every now and then I look back on the Trump presidency and I'm like, this guy has said some stuff, man.
I sometimes look back on it and I'm like, did I slip into like a coma? Was I really high for like 4 years? Like, I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's this is like, a weird...
This guy said some stuff, man.
He said some stuff. To be fair, though, I feel like that way about a lot of political figures, irregardless of what country it is.
Yeah.
In the UK recently, we got told that men were getting more violent because the doctor was a woman.
Yeah, and Boris...
Doctor Who, by the way, just not like a general doctor.
And like, Boris Johnson stopped halfway through a speech because he lost his place on his pages and started talking about Peppa Pig World. Do Americans get Peppa Pig?
I hope not. Just for their sakes.
Fucking Larry Bacon.
It's bad enough having it over here. That show teaches kids nothing except for how to be little shits.
Oh, I would love to know what the Americans make of Peppa Pig.
I don't know.
Mate, there's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of kid shows over here, though, that I would love, like... Could you imagine Americans watching, like, in the fucking Night Garden?
I don't know if that is... I think that might be an international thing, I think.
Yeah, because they do get BBC shows in America. They get BBC America.
I think in the Night Garden...
Because they have Paw Patrol, definitely, 100%.
Iggy Piggly and Oops Daisy and the Ninky Nonks.
What's the fucking one... what's the fucking one that's like they're all stripey?
They're all stripey.
Yeah, so there's like a blue one that's like a blue and like a darker blue and a lighter blue stripe. A green one that's like
The Hoobs.
Yeah, or the Froobs or something. The Hoobs. What the? Oh man.
I used to love the Hoobs
because the Americans got
they were little aliens.
Like
they
Americans
were on a bus
got Teletubbies.
The UK.
Didn't they?
Oh, Teletubbies. Traumatic.
And they all have there's like tubby babies now, bro.
Tubby babies.
Dead yeah, tubby. I don't know how we got on the subject of kids shows.
Also, the girl who played completely off topic. The girl who played the Sunshine is now a like full grown adult with her own baby.
Yeah,
and I'm like, what? Nah. Yeah, she's like in her like late 20s, early 30s, and has her own baby. And I'm like, oh my god,
that's mental.
No. Yeah, I would be intrigued because, like, obviously we don't really know what airs on American TV, but I would be intrigued to see, like, what shows have made it across. I'm now trying to think what because all the characters in the Night Garden have got really stupid names.
Hmm.
They're like the Froobly Loobs and
Lazy Town as well. That was another one.
Oh, Lazy. I think Lazy Town was American.
It looked like it was maybe European, because everybody in it looked like they were like a fucking European dance band from
the
90s.
That is very
That
very
fucking
true.
Mustache guy on the roller skates.
Oh, the villain. I can't remember
like
what he was called.
Looked like fucking Dick Dastardly. Like
he did look like Dick Dastardly.
On holiday in Miami.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got massively off topic. So yeah, Idle Hands. I think this movie surprisingly holds up really well.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's... The thing is, it's going to be one of those films where people will watch it and like it, or they'll watch it and hate it. I don't think there's really a middle ground on it. And if you don't like stupid stoner comedies, you're not going to enjoy this film.
I think it's one of those movies, like, if you grew up with it, or if you saw it kind of close to when it came out, you can definitely rewatch it. It definitely has rewatchability now. I think if it's one of those movies... If you were to watch it now for the first time, I don't necessarily know what your mileage of it would be, purely because they don't really make movies like this anymore.
Yeah, I think, because I'm on the weird foot of, like, I didn't see it until maybe 5 years ago, ish. And so I was a fully grown adult by the time I watched it. But I grew up watching a lot of dumb stoner comedies. So for me, it hit a note of, oh, yeah. I remember this shit.
It hits, like, that warm nostalgia button, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's really weird, because, like, as a general rule, like, I've never seen, like, the Harold and Kumar movies, which apparently are really funny.
I've seen the first one. I haven't seen the other two.
But, like, I grew up watching Dude, Where's My Car? Dude. Sweet. Dude. So, like, this movie, for me, really hits the nostalgia of Dude, Where's My Car? And, like, so, it's one of the movies I don't watch very often, but I love Dude, Where's My Car, because it's just stupid. So, yeah, I think that's the reason that I don't mind this movie. Like, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't go out of my way to go and put it on, but if I was lounging around the house and you were like, oh, should we put on Idle Hands, seeing as we're having an idle, lazy day, and I'd be like, yeah, fuck it, put on Idle Hands, I'll watch it. I'll go turn it off.
Yeah.
Plus, I really like Jessica Alba, so that's always a win.
I think it's one of those movies, like, I look back on it and fondness, and I'm like... I watch movies like, when I was younger, I watched movies like Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legend. And I was like, as a 14, 15-year-old, in Scream's case, like a 12, 13-year-old, there was nobody in those movies that I related to. I was like, I'm a 13-year-old kid watching Scream. I was like, I'm not this guy. Like, I'm not fucking... And I hadn't become Randy yet. So I was like, I don't know who any of
these... I love how that's your character for Scream. You're like, Definitely Randy.
I mean,
you are. You are 100%
Randy.
I
tell you, I'm Randy with Stu's energy.
Yeah, you are.
But this movie, I was like, instantly, I was like, that's Seth Green, like, that's Oz, that's who I, at that time in my life, I was trying to be. So it kind of holds that nostalgia of like, oh, like, this is a familiar, like, this is a character that looks like me and kind of sounds like me and does the weed, but I don't do that, but like, I'm 14 years old, what am I doing? Like, so to me, that's kind of where my, like,
life choices, apparently.
That's where my, like, my nostalgia for this movie comes from, is like, at this point in my life, this was where I was kind of discovering who I was. Like, I was kind of finding my own voice in the world and, like, my own style and my own, like, taste in music and clothes and things like that. So I think, like, that kind of always... And, like, I love the fact that this film has a scene where two dudes get killed with knitting needles. And as they're being killed, the Rob Zombie song, Dracula, gets louder as they're being murdered. And I was like...
Thing is, though, is in my head, I have the image of... Because Penub and Mick are off screen as it happens. And, like, they're in the room. And I get the feeling that he murders them and just, like... Mick picks up the remote and goes, turn that up.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's happening. That's why the volume goes up. In my head, Mick has turned the TV volume up. Yeah. He's like, this would look really cool with this soundtrack.
And I think if I'm being completely honest, it's the first time I ever heard Rob Zombie. So this movie's kind of also partially responsible for my obsession with Rob Zombie, who I absolutely adore. So yeah, like, this movie did a lot for me at a young age, and I think that's kind of why I love it so much. And it's one of those movies, like, I think everybody has, like, a movie or a band or a TV show that when you're younger, nobody's ever heard of it. So for a little bit, it's kind of like, this is my secret movie, or this is my secret band that, like, I love. And then, like, you try and tell, like, everybody else about it.
Yeah.
And this was kind of like that movie that, like, nobody I went to school with had really seen it. And I was like, this movie's fucking awesome, guys. Like, let's watch this movie. And everyone's like, no, man, that sounds weird. So, yeah, it was kind of like... And, like, there was a few, like, things growing up. Like, AFI for ages was a band that I was hugely into, like, no one had really heard of. And I was, like, kept trying to tell people to listen to AFI. And, like, 30 Seconds to Mars for a while, they were... Before they hit massive over here, I was into them for a while before, like, The Kill and stuff came out.
See, mine was always, like, when you talk about things that you love that other people didn't really know about, was, like, Mighty Boosh.
Yeah.
Because I went to Boosh really early. I don't know how popular they made it outside of the UK, but yeah, the Boosh was like, I was into it really early, and there was like me and my friend Sammy were the only two people in our friendship group who watched it, and we would constantly be like, oh my god, you should watch Mighty Boosh. And it was on at like 11 on BBC Three.
On like a Wednesday
night. Like, it had a really bad slot. And it was so much fun. And I, like, if any of our listeners have never seen The Mighty Boosh and, like, weird... Again, I would say kind of off-kilter, drug-induced comedy. Mighty Boosh would definitely be up your route, because it is very much like someone's dropped acid and made a TV show.
I'm about to make you feel really sad.
Oh.
We have American listeners, and I love our American listeners to pieces, and I think you're all wonderful. There are going to be people listening to this from America that probably only know Noel Fielding as the Great British Bake Off guy.
That's fair. I'm not.
Because nobody's seen luxury comedy.
I watch luxury comedy. But yeah, to just make a selling point for you, Noel Fielding, the weird guy from... It's called The British Baking Show over in America.
The Great British Baking Show.
From The Great British Baking Show is one of the members of the Mighty Boosh. Also, I realise it might not translate well into American, because one of them's London, one of them's a Northerner.
Yeah.
And it is very British. Also, they refer to our money as Euros, because they were convinced that we were going to become Euro at some point.
Yeah.
That has not worked out, guys.
Mm.
That was a fun show.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange show.
It's a weird show.
Mm.
It's the Killer Roo episode, the one that always gets me. And, the Hub of a Nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, my Boosh.
Do you have any other thoughts on Idle Hands?
No.
Would you recommend Idle Hands?
I have a few friends that I would recommend it to if they haven't seen it. because I'm like, you would take great joy in this film.
I feel like...
But as a general rule, probably not.
I feel like you've been very easy on this film. Suspiciously so. So is there anything about this movie that you didn't really like or that didn't work for you?
It's one of those films that, like, I'm just super middling on. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't hate it. I don't love it.
I know why. Because it's not part of a beloved franchise, so you don't want to shit on it.
That's true. That is true. Plus, it's got Seth Green in it. I can't be mean to
Next
Seth
week
Green.
When Gremlins, we do Gremlins, like, this movie fucking sucks. The puppets look shit.
Don't ruin it for everybody. They might be surprised.
Like fuck those puppets.
No, I'm just really middling on it. Like, I don't hate it. I don't love it. Like, I wouldn't turn it off. Because that would be effort if it came on telly. But, yeah, no, just really middling. There's nothing I really hate about it. I think the ending's stupid, but I feel that's because they took teenagers' input on what the ending of the film should be like.
And then the movie tanked anyway.
Because the original ending from the clips I've seen was a lot more, like, in line with what the film was up until that point. The end of this film's just really stupid. And I feel like that's what you get for taking Stoner's advice on what your film should be like.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, they were like, this is our target demographic.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then they were like, they changed it, and then they didn't think, oh shit, nobody's actually going to go see this, because they're all just going to sit at home and get high.
Yeah.
So that's why it became a really popular movie on video and DVD.
Yeah.
Because people just...
Thing is, as well, is I feel like it's one of these films that kind of has a bit of a cult following behind it. Like,
yeah. It's definitely...
People do like this film.
It's definitely a movie that I wouldn't go to the cinema to see, but I would definitely rent it and invite five friends over and just get a massive pizza and beers and watch it with
friends. I would love to watch this film high.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I feel like it would change the viewing experience of the film.
I don't know, man. I reckon you'd be, like, really paranoid. You'd be, like, just constantly just staring at your hands waiting for something to happen. I'd just walk in and you'd be, like, staring at your hands. You know, like, how sometimes the cats just stare at their paws?
Yeah.
I'm just walking in and you're just, like, staring at your hand. And I'm like, what are you doing? And you're like, my hand.
My hand. Really existential about the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, why is there five fingers on my hand?
That's fair. I'm quite existential in real life. I don't want to think what a stone to me would be like. Be fucked, man.
I don't know, man.
But yeah.
So yeah, I really like this movie. I think this movie really holds up. I think this movie is better than it has any right to be. And I think in the lexicon of like stoner comedies / horror movies, it's kind of a forgotten gem. It's kind of like one of those movies that's kind of like from a forgotten era. And like nobody really talks about it outside of like big like horror fans or like horror circles. It got a Scream Factory Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray like is on the top of my list now. We're getting a multi-region Blu-ray player, and the fucking Blu-ray is jam-packed. It's got like fucking audio commentaries, making ofs, like all kinds of shit on it, and I'm like, I want to see all of that. I think it's one of those movies, like, it kind of got a little bit lost to time. And there's a few movies in that 90s boom when everything was just like, let's make slasher movies. And they were like, here's Scream. So here's, like, 50 movies that are like Scream. And, like, as you say, the changing climate in America at the time, like, I think probably didn't help its chances. But let's be honest, the real life things that happened are way more important than a film's box office, and it's always going to be. And I feel like it's one of those movies, it got released in theatres, yanked really quickly, and then kind of they just tried to write it off. And then it's kind of found its life afterwards. Like, Jawbreaker is another one of those movies. Jawbreaker is a movie that I fucking love, and I know maybe five people in the world that have seen it. But it's fucking great. And it's because it's like a weird, wacky, off-kilter movie that's kind of like super mean, but it's one of those movies that's like... I love it. And it's like with this movie, it's like, I love this movie. I just want 10 of my friends to watch this movie and be like, I also really like it. And it's like, I find that it's these kind of movies that live in like these weird like pockets of existence that I get really protective over. And I'm just like, you should see this movie because it's fucking great. Yeah.
That's me with Repo. Like, literally.
Yeah,
like,
Repo's a prime example of this type of movie.
I'm, like, out in the streets going, have you heard the word of Repo?
But, like, there's a, like...
Or assaulting people in HMV.
Another movie that's, like, very typical of this kind of, like, thing as well is Trick or Treat.
Oh, yes.
Trick, not Trick or Treat with Sammy Kerr.
Trick or Treat.
Which is, like, another movie that's fucking amazing. It came out, like, everybody, like, all the horror fans who have seen it love it and they take it to the heart. And it's, like, a movie that we all love and we all celebrate. But there's, like, a bunch of movie that, like, people that, like, never heard of it. In fact, someone in our office went to me the other day. Oh, I watched a kind of okay horror movie the other day. It's called Trick or Treat. First time ever. And I'm like, you know what I mean? So, like,
you're like, have you heard about Sam?
Yeah. So
we love Trick or Treat in this house.
There are, like, a bunch of weird movies that I got into when I was a teenager. Like, The Doom Generation is another movie that I love, which is basically just, like, fucking natural born killers for kids. And it's fucking great. But yeah, I'm getting off topic. Like, basically what I'm saying is, this movie is a really good hidden gem, and, like, I would highly recommend it to anybody if they're having, like, a horror night, or if they're having, like, a Halloween party.
Stoner comedy night.
Yeah, like, just hunt this movie out. Watch it. It's, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's not really long.
It's not long. It's got a really good pace.
It's quite snappy.
It's got some good gore in it. It's got some amazing one-liners in it. Like, the fucking jokes in this movie are tremendous.
The killer was wearing your t-shirt.
The killer's wearing me. Like, there's some fucking great stuff in this movie. And I think it needs to be, like, more massively appreciated. Especially now as well, since Devon Sauer's, like, got back into horror in a big bad way. He's just, like, he's just appeared in the Chucky series. He's appeared in Black Friday with Bruce Campbell. He's got another horror project lined up that he was talking about on Twitter the other day. And I feel like he's kind of got his, like, second horror wind, like, in his early 40s. He was in Hunter x Hunter, which was one of the movies that came out this year, which was really, really good. Apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently it, like, knocked everybody's, like, socks off. So it's nice to see him getting a resurgence. And, like, I feel like if you want to go back and watch one of his earlier roles, definitely go back and watch his movie. Yeah, that's all I would say on it. For me, for score, purely based on, like, nostalgia and how the movie still makes, like I said to you, I was like, I can go like 10 years without watching this movie, but there are certain scenes of this movie that are, like, absolutely just seared into my brain because of, like, constant rewatches as a child.
Ah, look at me, I'm Leatherface.
Yeah, like, stuff like that. I would give this movie a 4 easily out of 5 axes. Yeah, definitely
100%. So, I'm giving it a 3. But that 3, it would have been a 2. The 3 is basically practical effects that gave it that 3. Because if we've learned anything from this podcast, I really fucking love a practical effect. And they pull it out of the bag on this. It's really fun. And I think it's all practical as well. There's not really any CGI in this at all. So they get points for that because they're quite inventive with how they do stuff. It's just generally a dumb movie. Like, if you don't want your brain to work and you just want mindless idiocy for, like, an hour and a half, hunt it out. Like, it's not even, like, even mildly insulting either. It's just generally a general fun film to sit and watch.
Also, the soundtrack bangs. Offspring, Kiss, Motley Crue, 2, which is Rob Halford's sexy industrial side project.
Rob Zombie.
And the Pop the Pussy song. I can never remember who it's by. Pop that pussy.
I wanna hug you.
Yeah. I can't remember who that's by, but the Pop the Pussy song's on there as well. But it's the edited version, so it's Pop That Booty.
Pop that booty.
But I can't remember who it's by.
I thought this video was banned.
It's where they're doing the little dance. Yeah. It's so funny.
His parents are dead on the floor and they're distracted by girls in bikinis.
But yeah,
I love it.
The song is great. And I love the fact that they snuck a little clip of the 2 video in there. Rob Halford hanging out with all of his porn stars doing kinky
but yeah,
stuff.
No, it's just a fun, mindless film. Like, I understand what you mean though. Like, it is very much a film that people don't tend to, like, know of. And you do, I feel a little bit like I have a few friends who I know full well would probably get a kick out of this film and just going, watch Idle Hands, like, do it, it's good for you. Yeah. And it's the same way I feel about other films as well. Like, there's certain films that I'm always constantly recommending to people, but this would be, like, very specific people in my life. I would be like, you'd probably get a kick out of this.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're going to go downstairs and text Mike and be like, have you ever seen Idle Hands? You should watch it.
I think even my mum likes this movie.
Yeah.
I think my mum had no choice, though, because me and my sister watched it so much as kids. And my sister... Not my sister. My mum likes Seth Green anyway.
To be
so.
Fair, your mum has weird taste in films. Like, she'll say something sometimes, and I'm like, you like that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I can't imagine my mum watching this film. She'd be like, what the fuck is this shit?
My mum's really funny, though, because, like... Because of, like, the type of teenagers that me and my sister were... My mum got into, like, really weird stuff. Like, she would, like, listen to, like, nu metal with us. She would, like, listen to, like, Linkin Park and, like, fucking Limp Bizkit. And, like, she would... Because when, like, nu metal took over, it was constantly on the TV. Like, my mum has a crush on Jonathan Davis from Korn. Yeah. And she loves Korn. And, like, I'm pretty sure, like, at one point, like... Like, my mum's the kind of person that's like, yeah, I really like Danny Filth. I really like Cradle of Filth. He looks really, really fucking cool, like, in all of his goth gear. And then you see his house, and it's Magnolia, and it looks shit, and it's well boring. And that's, like, kind of like my mum. That's kind of like my mum in a nutshell.
And there's my mum, who's like, I don't mind My Chemical Romance, but you can keep that rest of this shit away from me. So I do a massive him phase as a teenager, and she's just like, it's just depressing, it's bullshit. Don't you dare put that CD in this car, young lady. And I'm like... But him.
Yeah.
But I get with MCR and the Rasmus. My mum loves the Rasmus.
My mum's, like, really funny with stuff like that. But, yeah, like, I think it's because when we were younger, she would be the one that would go to the video shop and rent these movies with us. And then she would, like, sit and watch them with us. She kind of, like... It was kind of like a forced appreciation, I guess. She's like, well, I'm going to have to fucking watch it anyway. So she's just kind of like, she would just sit and watch. And the thing is, like, we would rent a video for like 2 days. So we'd rent a video on a Friday night and then we'd have to return it on a Sunday. So we would watch it like Friday night. Then we would probably watch it again Saturday. Then we'd watch it like Sunday morning, literally just before we took it back to the video store.
Yeah.
So it was kind of one of those things. She kind of just got into a habit of like, I'm going to have to fucking watch it anyway, so...
Yeah, and there's my mum who's just like, I don't want to see any of your shit, thank you.
Yeah.
Fair. Fair.
But yeah, so that's kind of our thoughts on Idle Hands. Probably went a little bit too long.
And also, really off topic multiple times.
We do apologise, but yeah.
You should be used to it. Don't apologise. If they're listening to us at this point in the year, they're used to us going off topic now.
As always, find us on SIMAHF pod on Twitter. So I'm Married a Horror Fan on Tumblr and Instagram. Don't forget, we have released a few episodes in the last week or so. We got a 5x5 up on our scariest horror movie characters. We released our Ghostbusters Afterlife episode last Monday. And next week we are coming back with the OG Gremlins, kicking off Christmas month in style.
Yay.
With some fucking Gremlins. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. As always, come follow us on social media. Come join the discussion. Even if you disagree with our choices. If you do, cool. If you don't, cool. You know, we just enjoy talking to people. And yeah, we'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves. Bye.
Bye.